Good evening, everyone. We apologize for the slight delay here, but we'll get started so that we don't waste any of everyone's precious time here this evening. Just a reminder, so I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is, as a reminder, it's a reconvened public hearing regarding conditional use application number 2022-06. It's filed by Equitable owner Linlow Governor Crossing LLC and Sheets Incorporated regarding a master plan development for redevelopment of land generally located in the southwestern quadrant of the intersection of West Governor Road and Richburg Road. As you recall, we met last week and concluded that hearing at approximately 9 p.m. We expect to run this hearing also to approximately 9 p.m. We'll try to break sometime halfway point, maybe sometime around 7:30 for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then we'll finish up around 9. We fully expect, because we want to make sure that all of the testimony that needs to come into the record comes into the record, and all of the people that wish to question witnesses have an opportunity to do so. So we fully expect to be scheduling more evenings of these kinds of hearings until we get to the conclusion. So with that, I do want to say, Mr. Emmerich, before we, let's take the roll call now, and I just want to do a couple of logistical.
Sure. Member Zimuda.
Here.
Member Carano.
Here.
Member Nutt.
Here.
Member Wyckoff.
Here.
Chairman members.
Here.
We have the full board.
So we have the full board present, and so as a reminder, Mr. Nelson, as the board solicitor, essentially will run the hearing for the board. The board sits in sort of this quasi-judicial role, listening to testimony, listening to the questions. And the applicant will present testimony, and then interested parties, either represented by counsel or by themselves, will have an opportunity to ask their own questions. And Mr. Nelson will essentially run the hearing for the duration. When you come to the podium, so we've tried to make it, again, we're getting better at making sure it's a little more comfortable for everyone that's involved in the proceedings. So feel free if you need to use the table, the chair, or you're more comfortable questioning witnesses to sit there, or you just want to put your materials there. Just have to remember, I'm trying to do my best here, speak loudly and into the microphone, because when your back is to people behind you, it's very difficult for them to hear. Just like sometimes we forget when we're up here that we are not projecting our voices loudly enough. So let's all do, really make sure we do our best to keep our voices up so everyone can hear. When you come to the podium, under any circumstance, because these meetings are tape recorded and everything in this room is being recorded, we do so for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. That's really important because, you know, 35 years ago, there weren't audio recordings. It was just a transcribed record. Now you have audio recordings, so your neighbors and our neighbors and people, our interested parties, can hear this meeting tomorrow on the internet. So the problem is if you don't identify yourself every time you come to the podium, no one knows if they're listening to the audio who's speaking. So all you have to do is identify yourself by first name, last name. I don't think it's necessary that you provide your address because the people coming to the podium are already identified as parties to this action. If for some reason you were going to go sit down and then you would come up later, you must again identify yourself. Right? I don't like to interfere with people when they're speaking, but we have to just stick to that. You don't have to introduce yourself every time you ask a question, but if you're asking questions and you sit down and you come back, you're going to have to. For the record, it's again for the audio, so people know who's speaking. So beyond that, we're going to, again, the same rule as last time with our counsel. For all interested parties, if you want to object to testimony, we just ask that you stand, and then Mr. Nelson will, allow each person standing to place their objection on the record at any point that they need to make as part of their objection. So that's just for people if you're objecting. If you're going to be questioning a witness, you're going to come to the podium you'll see everybody. If this is the first time you're coming, you'll see people, when it's your turn, Mr. Nelson will identify who the next questioner is. You get to come up to the podium, and you get to ask questions. It's also very important that you're asking questions and you're not actually testifying, right? So your role is to be, the lawyers all understand this, but if you're representing yourself, you're asking questions of the witness and you're not actually sort of testifying, right? And so it's easy sometimes when you come up to the mic, you're doing what I do. You start blabbing, you go on and you start talking, and it's like you're making the point, but you're a questioner, right? You're representing yourself. Your statement has no weight in the record. It's the witness's statement. So you have to kind of focus on asking questions and not providing your own answer. All right. So I think all things being equal, I think credit to everybody in the room. You're doing a great job. It's really helping us as a board to digest these issues. So we're grateful for everybody being here. And that's why we're going to just keep going until we finally get done this conditional use hearing. Thank the applicant and his team for being willing to entertain all of the different questions from all of us and provide the best information you can. And at the end of the day, there will be a complete record that we will all, as a board and our solicitor, will kind of sift through and identify what the next step is. But great job by everybody. We thank you for your participation. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Nelson.
And with that, I actually have no administrative matters, so I'm going to hand it back over to Mr. Chabon to call his next witness.
Thank you. We would call Greg Rogalski. Mr. Rogalski, if you could go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone, please.
Yes, my name is Greg Rogalski, R-O-G-A-L-S-K-I.
Sir, if you could be sworn before you start.
Yeah, thank you. Would you raise your right hand to be sworn? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you. And if you would just keep your voice slow as well. Engineers have a tendency to talk fast, so I want to slow you down right away. Thank you. Mr. Strong.
Thank you. If you could, tell us the name of your firm and the business address for your firm.
I am employed by Pannoni Associates. Our address is 5072 Ritter Road, Suite 102, Mechanicsburg, PA 17055.
And what is your position with Pannoni Associates?
I am an associate vice president and a civil division manager.
And could you describe for us generally what you do in that position at Pannoni?
I have the charge of about 20 individuals that work underneath me. We prepare a wide variety of land development plans, represent municipal clients, as well as water and wastewater clients.
And are you licensed as a professional engineer in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
Yes, I am. PE062469.
And if you could, describe for us your educational background and professional experience as it relates to being a professional engineer.
I have a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from Penn State University, and I have a master's degree in civil engineering from the University of Washington. I have 24 years of experience in this field.
And what is your specific experience in preparing or reviewing site plans and land development plans for land use projects, including mixed-use development projects such as the one that's proposed by this application?
I spend about half my employee time preparing land development plans. I spend about the other half doing municipal plan reviews. I have a wide range of experience in both of those fields over the course of the last 24 years, including many plans here in Derry Township. One specific example was the Legacy Park project in Mechanicsburg Borough, where I reviewed plans for this for multi-use project.
And what do you do to remain current in your field?
As a professional engineer in Pennsylvania, I'm required to obtain continuing education in the form of PDHs or professional development hours on a two-year cycle.
And have you testified as an expert before municipal boards and zoning proceedings previously?
Yes, I have.
And how many times have you testified in that capacity?
20 or more.
And has any municipal board ever refused to accept you as an expert?
No, they have not.
I'm showing you what's been marked as applicant's exhibit A14. Is that a copy of your resume?
Yes, it is.
And does that exhibit accurately summarize your qualifications?
Yes, it does.
With that, I would offer Mr. Rogalski as an expert witness in the field of civil engineering, particularly as it relates to design and compliance with municipal land use ordinance requirements.
Do any of the four attorneys have any board here questions for this particular witness?
I do not.
I do not either.
Mr. Chris?
I do not.
Mr. Winter?
I do not.
Is there any objection to having this witness accepted as a expert in civil engineering? Is that correct, Mr. Strong?
Correct.
No.
No objection.
That being said, he's been being accepted as offered. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rogalski, are you generally familiar with the Gary Township land use ordinances?
Yes, I am.
And we have submitted as Exhibit A1 a copy of the master plan set. Did your firm prepare the master plan set that was submitted with the application and that has been identified as applicant's Exhibit A1 for purposes of the hearing?
Yes, we did. One point of clarification, Snyder's Carey became a division of Pannoni at the beginning of this year. You'll see both names on plan sets, and that's the reason why.
And was the master plan subsequently revised after the application was filed?
Yes, it was revised on September 9th, 2022.
And we've identified as applicant's Exhibit A2 the revised master plan with that date of September 9th, 2022. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And was the master plan then further revised in October after the applicant purchased the DeFelice property and the dialysis care center told the applicant that they were going to remain at their current location in the township?
That is correct. The last revised date on that plan is October the 13th, 2022. It's the most current plan in the exhibit package.
And that plan has been marked as applicant's Exhibit 824. Is that correct?
Correct.
And did your firm, let me take a step back. If you could, just describe for us briefly, because I think we've covered these revisions previously, but describe for us the revisions that were made to the master plan, as currently set forth on Exhibit A24.
So as the project progressed over the course of time, there was an additional property added to the master plan boundary known as the DeFelice property. There was some additional adjustment to the right-of-way on the east side of the project as additional information became available as to the requirements of the Fishboro Road widening. And then finally, the original dialysis center was rebadged as a medical or healthcare practitioner's office as the dialysis center, as you mentioned, was not no longer interested in the problem.
And we have submitted an exhibit identified as applicant's Exhibit A25, which is a rendering of the master plan. Was that exhibit prepared by your firm?
Yes, it was.
The master plan, and specifically sheets MP1.0 and MP3.0, do those plan sheets include or depict the site development information or features required by Section 225-501.58.A.4.G, Romanet 2 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes, it does.
And do those plan sheets also include or depict the zoning and subdivision and land development regulation modifications or waivers that are required by Section 225-501.58.A.4.G.X of the zoning ordinance?
Yes, they do.
And did your firm also prepare a waiver letter that includes the justifications for the waivers from the township's subdivision and land development ordinance?
That is correct. That letter contains a request for 5 waivers.
I'm showing you what's been marked as applicant's Exhibit A15. Is that a copy of the waiver letter that was submitted?
Yes, it is.
And were those waivers reviewed at the Planning Commission meeting earlier this year?
Yes, they were.
And did the Planning Commission recommend approval of the waivers that are identified in that letter?
Yes, they did.
Turning to sheets MP2.1 and 2.2 of the revised master plan, do those sheets include, and I'm going to run through a number of ordinance sections here, but do those sheets include the property information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G.I of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
And do those plan sheets include the zoning information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G Romanet 3 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
And do those plan sheets include the topographic information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G Romanet 4 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
Do those plan sheets include the soil information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G Romanet 7 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
And lastly, do those plan sheets include the environmental information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G Romanet 8 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
Sheet MP4.0 of the revised master plan, does that plan sheet include or depict the landscaping information or features required by section 225-501.58.A.4.G Romanet 5 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
Section 225-501.58.A.2.A Romanet 2 of the zoning ordinance requires master plan development sites in the Hershey Mixed Use District to be at least 1 acre in size. What is the size of the property that is being assembled for this proposed master plan?
The overall tract boundary is approximately 7.42 acres, and with the reduction of the additional right-of-way areas, the net area is 6.92 acres, both of which exceed the minimum requirement.
Section 225-501.58.A.2.A Romanet 3 of the zoning ordinance requires master plan development sites to have at least 150 feet of frontage abutting a public right-of-way. If you could, please describe for us the proposed frontage for this proposed master plan development.
As previously testified, the proposed property, the property, has frontage on essentially three streets, the first being Governor Road, the second being Fishburne Road, and the third being a proposed public street known as Relocated Sandhill Road. So there are three frontages, all of which exceed the 150-foot requirement.
Section 225-501.58.A.2.A Romanet 4 of the zoning ordinance requires that master plan development sites provide for direct points of ingress and egress in a manner to assure convenient and safe access, which will not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads. If you could, and we've had some testimony already, but describe for us the proposed access points to the master plan development.
There's one right-in access driveway off of West Governor Road. There's a right-in, right-out driveway access off of Fishburne Road, commonly known as Pork Chop or Channelization Island. There's also a two-way means of egress onto Relocated Sandhill Road in this area.
And when the master plan was prepared and revisions were made to it, were those proposed access points designed and intended to be constructed in accordance with all applicable township and or PennDOT standards so as to ensure and provide for convenient and safe access to the proposed project?
Yes, they have. And the reason for the multiple submissions of drawings was also kind of centered around some of the feedback we were receiving as part of traffic impact study review and others for this very purpose.
Section 225-501.58.A.2.A Romanet 5 of the zoning ordinance requires that to the greatest extent possible, any sensitive environmental features, including existing wooded areas or historical resource areas, be preserved as part of a master plan development site. Describe for us the property that's the subject of this master plan and whether there are any historical resources or wooded areas that are required to be preserved.
The conglomeration of this property can be somewhat described as a redevelopment site where there are a number of areas that have been disturbed previously. There's some grass, there's some trees, but it does not contain any of the sensitive environmental features outlined in the zoning ordinance, including historical resources or wooded areas.
Section 225-501.58.A.7.C of the zoning ordinance permits applicants seeking approval of a master plan to increase impervious coverage of the entire gross area of a master plan site by up to 10% more than the underlying base zoning district requirements. Are you familiar with that provision?
Yes.
Does the application in the master plan that is proposed utilize and use the impervious coverage bonus that is provided for in that section of the zoning ordinance?
Yes, it does.
And if you could just explain for us, you know, how much of an increase there is over what is otherwise permitted in the underlying zoning district.
So if you look at the overall tract boundary as it exists on the rendering, the total impervious area of the site is approximately 65.6%. The underlying zoning district is actually split. So there are two zoning districts on this particular property, one the Hershey Mixed Use and one the Hershey Mixed Use with the 013 overlay. When you actually combine those two and create the base zoning allowable weighted average, the weighted average is approximately 59.73%. When you add the 10% bonus to that 59.73% by going through the master plan process, that raises the allowable maximum impervious coverage to 69.73%, which is approximately 4.13%. Percent greater than what we have shown. So essentially what is illustrated on the current plans at 65.6% is 4% or so less than the maximum allowable. In addition to that, the proposed project includes, you know, some public accessible entities such as, you know, bicycle paths, pedestrian paths, which are located on the property and counted in the impervious area of the property. And they're also intended to obviously connect to the existing path network within the general area. The additional impervious area also provides for additional parking spaces above and beyond the minimum that's outlined in the zoning ordinance, which are 12 additional. There's 221 currently required, and we're proposing 233.
Section 225-501.58.A.7.D, Romanet 1 of the zoning ordinance, states that the minimum yard area requirements for the perimeter of a master plan development shall comply with the minimum setback requirements of the underlying district. So here for this project, does that require a minimum building setback of 25 feet from front lot lines and 5 feet from side lot lines?
Yes.
And do all buildings that are proposed as part of the master plan development comply with the applicable minimum setback requirement?
Yes, they do.
Are you familiar with section 225-501.58.A.7.D, Romanet 2 of the zoning ordinance, which requires a minimum of class 1 or class 2 buffer yards?
Yes.
And are those buffer yards required to be provided on all master plan boundaries, except where the boundary abuts a street, in which case no buffer yard is required, or if it abuts land in the Hershey Mixed Use District, in which case a minimum of Class 5 or Class 6 buffer yard is required?
That's right.
And are the required buffer yards provided and depicted on the revised master plan?
Yes, they are.
And if you could, just describe for us the required and proposed buffer yards. I believe they're depicted on sheet MP 4.0 of the master plan.
What's on the screen is the rendering, but we'll use that to basically describe. You know, there are class 5 buffer yards provided in the area where the Hershey Mixed Use Zone abuts the Southern 4 Overlay Zone. There's additional class 4 buffer yards provided, although they're not required, along certain elements of the street frontage in these two areas, specifically adjacent to the sheets on Fishburne and Governor Rhodes, as well as in the on the side of the actual healthcare practitioner's office. It does abut three street rights of way, as previously indicated, and we have provided additional buffering above and beyond the ordinance requirements in areas where it makes sense.
Are you familiar with sections 225-501.58.A.7E and section 225-402.4.B of the zoning ordinance, which permit reductions in cumulative parking space requirements in accordance with the shared parking demand chart?
Yes, I am.
And does the application use the cumulative parking space reduction provisions set forth in those sections of the zoning ordinance?
Yes, it does.
Showing you what's been marked as applicant's exhibit A17, is that the shared parking analysis that you prepared?
That is correct, yes.
And describe for us the parking that is proposed for the master plan.
So the general concept behind shared parking, of course, is to allow specific parking closest to some of the uses, but then a shared area where parking can be provided for all of the uses together. The shared parking analysis looks at each individual use as itself, as if it were on a separate lot, and then allows us to essentially reduce the number of parking spaces required by analyzing when the peak times of usage are for the individual types of uses. In this particular case, if you were to aggregate all of the required parking, you would need 263 spaces for the four uses shown in the plan. The plan provides for 221, as previously indicated. The requirement, as identified in the shared parking analysis, is 221 parking spaces, and 233 shared parking spaces have been provided to the project.
It is all of the off-street parking that is proposed, designed, and intended to be constructed in compliance with the applicable provisions of Section 225-402 of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
And no on-street parking is proposed as part of this project or as part of the application, correct?
Correct. There is no on-street parking proposed.
And as defined in Section 225-1103 of the zoning ordinance, and as regulated in Section 225-501.58.A.7.F, no common driveways are proposed as part of the application, correct?
Correct.
Earlier, we had talked about the Planning Commission and their recommendation of approval of both the application and the waivers. I'm showing you what's been marked as applicant's exhibit A16, is that a letter from the township confirming the action of the Township Planning Commission in recommending approval?
Yes, it is.
I want to talk a little bit about the proposed sheets and the fuel service criteria. Section 225-501.19.E of the zoning ordinance requires fuel service establishments adjacent to residential uses to be provided with a landscape buffer consistent with the zoning ordinance. In your opinion, is that requirement not applicable to this proposed project since the sheets is not adjacent to an existing residential use?
That is correct. The ordinance clearly identifies that that particular provision is related to an existing residential use, and therefore this requirement is not applicable.
And I believe there was a discussion earlier during Mr. Gates' testimony regarding that ordinance requirement. And would the applicant be able to explore providing additional landscaping during the land development plan review and approval process?
Mr. Strong, Mr. Crist, were you standing to object?
I was standing to object, yes.
Okay. Please stand, and also you can say objection.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to object to Mr. Stone's characterization of Section 225-501.19 and what it says. What point E, and I can provide copies for the board, so they can follow along is, in fact, why don't I do that?
Does this have to do with the fuel service?
Yes.
And the statement regarding the buffering?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the board's purview to interpret the ordinance. The witness certainly can state that, you know, what his opinion is, but that doesn't have to hold any weight with the board.
All right,
it's a legal decision on the board's part. So we recognize it's just his opinion, and we will...
Well, I wanted to establish for the record that Section E says fuel service establishments adjacent to residential uses. It doesn't have the word existing in there. So they are proposing a residential use with it, and it would be my position that that would be applicable absent a variance.
Your objection so noted. As I said, we'll take it into consideration. The board will take it into consideration at the end of the hearing during deliberations. Thank you. Mr. Strong, sorry to interrupt you.
Thank you. Turning to Section 225-501.19.G of the Zoning Ordinance, that section requires buildings and structures associated with a major fuel service establishment to be located no closer than 200 feet to a building used as a dwelling which exists at the time of the establishment of the facility, unless separated from said dwelling by an existing or proposed public street other than an alley. The proposed Sheetz convenience store building, the fueling canopy, those are located, within, let me restate that. Neither the convenience store building or the canopy that are proposed for the Sheetz fueling facility, neither are proposed to be located within 200 feet of an existing building used as a dwelling that is not separated from the proposed improvements by an intervening public street right-of-way. Is that correct?
Objection. Leading. Mostly leading. Council is testifying here.
I fully understand, sir. Mr. Strong, I would have to agree with that. If you could please make the... rephrase the question.
Is the proposed Sheetz convenience store building or the proposed Sheetz fueling canopy proposed to be located within 200 feet of an existing building used as a dwelling that is not separated from the proposed Sheetz by an intervening public street right-of-way?
No, it is not.
Thank you. Turning to the group child care facility criteria, Section 225-501.52.B.2, are you familiar with that section of the zoning ordinance?
Yes, I am.
And does that section of the zoning ordinance require that all outdoor play areas be setback distances of at least 25 feet from side and rear property lines?
Yes, it does. The proposed plan meets those criteria.
So to follow up with that, there are two outdoor play areas proposed for the group child care facility?
That is correct. On the rendering, there's an area to the right side of the front of the building shown, in this area, a larger area, as well as a building to the left side, which would be the south side.
And are both of those outdoor play areas designed and proposed to be setback distances of at least 20 feet from any rear or side property line?
Yes, they are.
Section 225-501.52.B.2 of the zoning ordinance further prohibits outdoor play areas from being located between the front face of a daycare center building and a public right-of-way. Are either of the outdoor play areas located between the front face of the daycare center building and a public right-of-way?
For the purpose of the record, the front face of the daycare facility is this eastern facade, and there are no play areas proposed between that front face.
Are the public improvements that are proposed as part of the master plan development designed and intended to be constructed in all accordance with all applicable requirements of the zoning ordinance and the subdivision and land development ordinance and the stormwater management ordinance?
Yes, they are.
I want to talk briefly about relocated Sand Hill Road.
Currently, Sand Hill Road bisects the project and intersects Fishburne Road at an unsignalized intersection. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And is that existing intersection located approximately 300 feet south of the signalized intersection of Governor Road and Fishburne Road?
That is correct.
If you could just describe for us the proposed relocated Sand Hill Road improvements that are part of this project.
As part of this project, the northern portion of Sand Hill Road, which currently essentially bisects the site, will be relocated further to the south, approximately an additional 300 feet. I believe the exact measurement is 285 feet to be able to provide additional area for transportation improvements. A new signal will be installed, as previously testified by Mr. Gates. Eventually, this has been designed to facilitate a connection to the extension of Hope Drive, which has been identified on the township's official map and other planning documents.
And has the, let me back up, we've also talked about the possible extension of Hope Drive. Has relocated Sand Hill Road been designed so that it could connect with that Hope Drive extension project if that project ever moves ahead?
That is correct. The portion that is intended to be dedicated to the township, which is relocated Sand Hill Road, has been designed so that it could be extended in a number of different alignments across adjacent properties to be able to connect with Hope Drive in the future.
Exhibit, applicant's exhibit A12 is a revised truck turning exhibit. Was that revised truck turning exhibit prepared by your firm at the request of the township?
Yes, it was.
And if you could just describe for us generally the truck turning movements that are depicted on that exhibit.
So truck turning for this particular project would enter off of Fishburne onto relocated Sand Hill Road. Ultimately, we enter the two-way access drive, and of course, the primary truck would be the fuel truck for the sheets. Would enter here, come up to the fueling facility, of course, make its delivery, and then proceed to exit on the right out with its on the exit of the property.
And in your opinion, and based on your preparation of that truck turning exhibits, are the trucks anticipated to be able to safely make all necessary turning movements for entering and exiting the project?
That is correct. All the feasible trucks that you know the facility could see, including the fuel truck as well as fire apparatus, were reviewed as part of that process. Increases to radii, curb radii occurred to be able to facilitate a delivery to the facility.
Have you had an opportunity to review the remaining comments in the Township Engineer's review letter dated October 18, 2022?
Yes.
And do you see any issues with addressing those remaining comments in that letter?
I do not. The one comment, which is under Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance, comment number 2, is related to, I believe the comment reads, speed humps or other traffic calming measures should be evaluated. Specifically, previous testimony and questions have centered around this particular area in here, and we intend to evaluate those measures as prescribed during the subdivision and land development process.
In your opinion, will the application overburden existing public water, sanitary sewer, road, storm drainage, or other public improvements?
No, it will not.
In your opinion, does this application comply with all applicable requirements of the zoning ordinance?
Yes.
A question was raised earlier during testimony regarding section 185-22.C.14 of the township's subdivision and land development ordinance. Are you familiar with that ordinance section?
Yes, I am.
And does that ordinance section require at least 2 street connections to existing public streets if 10 or more dwelling units are proposed?
That is correct.
In your opinion, does the master plan propose the necessary street connections to Governor Road, Fishburne Road, and Sand Hill Road?
Yes, it does.
Have you reviewed the narrative that was submitted as part of the application and identified as applicant's exhibit 826?
Yes.
And do you adopt the narrative, including the statements contained in the narrative about ordinance compliance as part of your testimony?
Yes, I do.
Those are all the questions I have for Mr. Rogalski.
Mr. McGinn?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Rogalski, I'm going to start with some questions about shared parking. So are you able to bring up exhibit A17? Mm-hmm. So my first question relates to how you calculated the shared parking for the medical office use. I think I heard you testify earlier that you consider that new building to be a healthcare practitioner's office. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way you start calculating even the shared parking is to look at the table related to the general or regular parking ratios. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And each use in the ordinance has listed out how much parking is required for that particular use, right?
Yes.
For the healthcare practitioner's office, it lists out 3 for each professional who typically sees patients, plus 1 for each professional or employee who typically does not see patients. Is that accurate?
I would assume it is, yes.
Okay. And did you or someone in your firm utilize that criteria to initially calculate what's on this table? Let me refer your attention specifically to the medical, what you've listed out in the first row there as the medical office, 8,000 square feet. Is that the healthcare practitioner's office?
Yes, it'd be a consistent use, yes.
All right. So the line that states required parking spaces by ordinance, that particular row lists 27 all the way across. You would agree with that?
Correct.
And that's what would be required if there was no shared parking. Is that right?
Correct.
And can you explain to us what that number is based on? Is it based on there being a certain number of professionals proposed plus a certain number of employees proposed?
Correct. And based on the actual identified requirements within the ordinance, that was the calculation that was made based on our assumptions for the facility.
All right, so what my question is going to is, did the developer and or owner define for you how many professionals there were going to be in that building?
I believe we made some assumptions, yes.
All right, and do we know, by any chance, do you know what assumptions were made?
I do not off the top of my head.
All right, so in other words, if I ask you to figure out, as you're testifying here today, how you came up with 27, you wouldn't be able to give me that answer.
I'd have to figure it out, but not off the top of my head.
All right. And I guess it's fair to say you weren't the one who actually performed these calculations anyway.
Correct.
Okay. Of course, if there were to be a different number of professionals in that building, it could modify the numbers that are listed on this particular table, right?
I would agree, and any change in use in a future iteration would have the same effect that right. The parking demand would be required just based on what's physically there.
Okay. And then with respect to the daycare, do we know how many children there are proposed to be within the daycare center?
I do not. I'd probably defer that testimony to the architect who may be able to speak to that.
Okay. Do you have the zoning ordinance available to you tonight? And really what I'm asking is, you have this chart related to how you figured out what the proposed parking is for the daycare center.
Can you repeat the question?
So same question that I asked you with respect to the healthcare practitioner's office. I'm trying to determine how you arrived with respect to the daycare center as it requiring 43 total parking spaces.
Once again, we utilize the requirements of the ordinance to calculate that number. I cannot stand here for you tonight and exactly tell you how we came to that at this time. I have to review that a little further.
Okay. And then with respect to the convenience store, it looks like that was broken down into convenience store retail. I'm looking at about the 1, 2, 3, 4th use down. You see that convenience store retail, 5,504 square feet?
Correct.
And then it's also broken down into convenience store indoor seats, and it says 25. Does that 25 indicate that there will be approximately 25 indoor seats?
Correct.
And then convenience store outdoor seats, and that says 12.
Correct.
So what is, what the developer explained to you is there's proposed to be 12 outdoor seats and 25 indoor related to the convenience store.
Those are the assumptions that the parking would now be based on. Yes. Okay.
So, on this particular chart, it lists out a retail store size of 5,504 square feet. Your plan lists out 6,070 square feet as the size with respect to the retail store. Do you know what that discrepancy is? Is that related to an area that's devoted to the indoor food service area?
I believe there was an assumption made that the indoor food area, because it's accounted for in a different part of the calculation, is not then to be included inside of the what I'll call it, the retail area, for example, that would be captured by that.
Okay.
You know, the gross collective addition of those three items for the whole convenience store use is really the intent, to try to capture all of those types of uses.
Then, as you testified, you're proposing more parking than what is actually required by ordinance when you utilize the shared parking criteria.
Correct.
And can you tell us why that decision was made to have more parking than is required?
Once again, we believe that the ordinance provides certain provisions. We believe that some additional spaces, A, allow us for flexibility for future modifications to the plan. As you mentioned, if there's additional practitioner added, we would have space to be able to accommodate that. And once again, everybody seems to have a park. So as we have learned, as the developers learned, more parking is better than less. But at the same time, we don't want to have so much parking that there's just empty spaces there all the time.
Right. And of course, the parking does add to your impervious surface percentage. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And therefore, as a result, it adds to the amount of stormwater that you have to address. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
And I didn't hear any testimony from you tonight related to stormwater, other than the application will comply with the stormwater management ordinance of Derry Township, right?
Correct. As indicated in the ordinance, the master plan is intended to provide a higher level review of the document. It's not intended to go into detail in a subdivision or land development plan, would be at which point it would address those issues as well as the provisions of the stormwater rights.
And it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to address that up front because you might have some modifications or tweaks even after conditional use approval, correct?
Correct, because it's driven off the total amount of impervious area. Once we have the plan locked down, we would be able to then proceed with the calculations for the stormwater.
Okay. So now I'm going to refer your attention to section 225.501.19c, and you had testified to this previously, but let me get you there. This section relates specifically to the fuel services, the major fuel services, conditional use conditions.
Okay.
Can you repeat the section?
It's 225-501-19. Do you have that available?
Stand by.
He testified regarding subsections E and G. Are those the sections you're following up on?
I am going to ask him a question about C and E and G. Actually, D, you'll see C, D, and E. So first I'll direct your attention to subparagraph C. You see that? It relates to fuel canopies.
That is correct.
And this section provides fuel canopies and their support structure shall not contain interior illumination that's used to attract attention to the canopy. Does your plan comply with that particular provision?
I believe it does, and additional testimony will be provided by representatives from Sheet specific to that topic.
Okay, very good. And then with respect to subparagraph D, you'll agree this applies canopies serving more than 8 vehicles must provide a visual break in canopy size or projection to avoid the overly simplified, unarticulated, or commercial look of longer canopies. You agree? That's what the section provides, first of all, right?
Yes.
And then you probably heard me ask some questions of the developer related to that. Do you feel that the canopy that's being proposed complies with that particular section?
It is my opinion that that does meet the requirements listed in that particular section.
Okay.
Once again, additional testimony will be provided in terms of representatives and the architect.
All right. Well, with respect to your opinion, the terminology that's used here is a visual break in canopy size or projection. So what is it that's being proposed that gives you the opinion that there is a visual break in the canopy?
It's my belief that this was intended to address solid masses, whereas this particular canopy is angled, number one. Number two, has a truss structure underneath that provides a break in the rhythm of the canopy. It's not just a solid face or a flat face.
Okay,
that's my opinion.
So what you're testifying to is, as your eyes would move along the canopy, they're going to see some features that are underneath the canopy, and that gives you a visual break.
Correct.
Okay. And then directing your attention to subparagraph E, you'll agree this provides fuel service establishments adjacent to residential uses shall provide a landscape buffer consistent with this chapter.
Correct.
Your attorney asked you some questions related to that section earlier, correct?
Correct.
And you gave the opinion that that relates to existing residential uses, correct?
Correct.
Referring your attention to subparagraph G, you would agree with me that that section specifically calls out dwellings which exist at the time of an establishment of the facility, right?
Correct.
But you would agree that subparagraph E does not use that same terminology to discuss which exists at the time of the establishment.
I would agree.
Would it be possible to provide a landscape buffer in between the sheets and the apartment's use?
I do not believe it'd be possible to provide a fully compliant buffer. However, we have and have suggested that we are willing to provide vegetation, additional types of screening to the extent feasible, as well as other elements of a buffer yard in between the sheets and the proposed residential use, so as to not interfere with any clear sight triangles or other types of regulatory requirements.
Okay. And then you were just indicating with your pointer, an area that's just to the, I guess that would be just to the north of the apartment building?
That is correct. And keeping in mind the first floor of this is commercial space with apartments above.
Right. So your buffering would have to be something taller in theory if you're going to provide buffering for purposes of the residential use. Is that accurate?
Yes, correct.
You would agree with me that there could be some light illumination, whether it be from headlights of vehicles or whether it be from the sheet's lighting itself, that might emanate, you know, from the sheet's area over towards that apartment complex or apartment building.
Yes.
And that could include the lighting that's under the canopy for the gas pumps, right?
Once again, I believe the township's ordinance would be very restrictive in terms of what light pollution occurs and the distance of travel. So therefore, the canopy lighting would be focused to the areas under the canopy, but certainly if you were in an apartment, you'd be able to see.
Okay. And you would anticipate that there's going to have to be some lighting throughout the parking lot for sheets because that's going to be 24 hours, 7 days a week, right?
Correct.
And even though the lighting ordinances normally require that lighting be directed in a downward direction and shielded in a manner so it doesn't emanate off property lines, there's still going to be some lighting that would be visible, right, from the apartment building?
Yes.
With what you have considered or proposed, would you expect that that side of the building at least could be shielded? On the, is it the second and the third floors, or just the...
Correct. The residential is above the commercial, and that particular property also sits a little lower than the sheets itself. So to the extent that some level of screening, it would not be... Well, the applicant is willing to review any potential screening methods to be able to facilitate the screening of that light.
Okay. The proposal is for second and third floor apartment units.
Correct.
Right? I would imagine it would be somewhat difficult to provide buffer for a third floor unit.
Absolutely. Even a second.
Okay. Do you know, based on what you've seen, and I know this isn't really your area of expertise, but do you know if that side of the building will have windows on it for the apartment?
I believe that to be best answered by the architect.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you giving that testimony. Again, referring your attention to section 225-501.29, you would agree with me, this section relates to retail, it says large-scale retail, specifically it relates to additional conditions that have to be met when a conditional use approval is required. Is that
yes.
correct? Okay. And then specifically referring your attention to subparagraph E, that provides any structure containing a street, fronting, facade, wall of more than 100 horizontal feet shall provide horizontal and vertical breaks in the building to reduce the appearance of a long, flat building base. Do you feel that what's been proposed here with respect to that retail and apartment building meets that particular provision?
Yes, I do. And once again, I believe the architect will testify to that particular provision.
Okay. As a civil engineer, though, it's your job, or part of your job, is to make sure that there is complete compliance with the zoning ordinance, right?
Correct.
So did you review that type of criteria when you were putting this together?
Yes, and the design team had discussed that particular provision, and I believe even the renderings submitted also support that.
So, and the renderings that I saw have kind of pushed out or bumped out, and then there's a period where it goes in and it comes back out. Is that what you feel complies with this provision?
That is correct. And as the facade is shown on this particular rendering, it may not contain those exact nuances of those breaks, but they're present.
Okay. Have you dealt with that provision before in other instances, other projects that you've worked on?
I have, mainly related to the townhomes, yes.
Okay. And did you propose a similar type of appearance, or was there a similar type of appearance proposed?
Typically, it's a step, as you kind of described, between facades or portions of facades to create that visual break almost along a flat face that you kind of consistent with the sale for a moment.
Okay.
Where
one is set back a little bit and the other is...
Correct. One unit may be set back, or portions of units. Two units may be set back from another two units. Something of that nature.
Okay.
One second, please. Okay.
Now?
That's better now.
Make it very close.
All right, and you were asked some questions about traffic calming measures, and I believe you were present when I asked some questions of the developer related to some potential traffic calming measures along that internal driveway.
Correct, yes.
And I heard you testify tonight that you are considering those. It's something that will be potentially discussed during the subdivision approval process or land development approval process.
Yes, that is correct. The specific comment by the township was related to those traffic calming measures, including signage. That's actually what that section speaks to. We will evaluate those. Those traffic calming humps, if you will, have impacts on stormwater and drainage collection, so looking at it holistically makes sense.
Okay. You would agree the one aspect of just general conditional use criteria is to ensure that there's public health, safety, welfare, and specifically that there won't be any detriment with respect to traffic. Right?
I would agree, yes.
So with respect to this conditional use hearing, is there anything that you and or the developer is willing to propose to ensure safety along that particular internal driveway?
We have discussed, once again, the addition of speed humps that would have a raised pedestrian crossing, potentially an appropriate sign somewhere along that corridor.
Okay.
To be able to facilitate that
All right.
objective.
And in your professional opinion as an expert, that would reduce or slow down the traffic that comes in off Governor Road and potentially heads back toward the relocated Sand Hill River.
Yes, I believe that's the intent of the objective. The reality is I believe that cars would actually speed up once they go over the hump to try to make up time.
Okay. So that would then potentially require you to either propose an additional speed hump maybe, or locate it in such a place or location such that they wouldn't have a whole lot of space to increase their speed.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And in addition to speed humps, there could be other measures. You would agree with that?
Correct.
And there's different types of speed calming devices, like humps. There's actual speed bumps and tables.
There's a traffic calming handbook that outlines a number of different items that can be utilized in this particular instance.
I don't know if there's space for this, but you could even use like a chicane. Is that true, where there would be a curve to the road?
Yes, you could. However, I believe in this instance there are some other bump outs and things like that that provide the same level of traffic calming as a chicane that would be more appropriately used in this particular application.
Okay. So you are leaning towards the a speed table or a speed hump?
It seems to be the most reasonable and allow the truck traffic to traverse it as well.
Okay. And obviously that's a significant consideration, right? Because the trucks are likely to come in off Sand Hill and come in a northward direction on that driveway, right?
Correct.
So if you were to install something, you're going to need to ensure that they can navigate it, right?
Correct.
And I heard you give some testimony earlier that you often sit with municipalities as an engineer. So I would imagine you have significant experience in reviewing these exact types of issues. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And in those instances, you're giving advice to the Board of Supervisors and or otherwise concerning what types of measures should be implemented so that the township can be assured there is safety within a development, right?
I have a great deal of experience in the borough setting where we have these specific issues related to pedestrian safety as well as speed that fit in the same exact type of application.
Okay. All right. Then let me turn your attention to the truck turning radii. And if we could get that exhibit. Is that, for the record, it's exhibit A12?
Yes, sir.
And let me let Chuck put that up on the screen. Okay.
Mr. McNabb, Richard, it might be helpful for us to, if Mr. Everett could just make that a little larger on the screen. I don't want to cut off any part of your diagram, but the larger you make on the screen, it's easier for all of us to see it.
Okay, thank you. Do you have A12 available to you?
Yes.
Someone's holding all our exhibits that were submitted.
Okay. All right. Well, I can go through it on the screen then.
I'm comfortable.
Well, while we're locating the exhibit so that we can go through each page, you would agree with me that A12 has, I think it's three pages to it?
Correct.
And the first page is exhibit 1.1, right?
EXB 1.1, correct.
EXB 1.1. Does that stand for exhibit or something else?
Exhibit, correct.
And then the second page is EXB or exhibit 1.2,
correct,
and then EXB 1.3, correct?
Correct.
And the first page relates to a specific size truck. It looks like it's the Sheets tanker, is that correct?
Correct.
And it's got an overall length listed of 57,530 feet, is that true?
57.5.
I'm sorry, yeah. 57,530 feet?
Correct.
And so that's, I guess, what I refer to as a tractor trailer. Is that accurate?
Yes, correct.
All right. And then turning to page 2 of exhibit A12, or EXB 1.2, that one relates to a different size truck, right?
Correct.
Now that is listed as Sheets DC1. Is that right?
That would be a delivery type vehicle, more of a box, what you consider a conventional tractor trailer, what you see on the highway.
Okay, so the second one relates to a normal tractor trailer. What does the first one relate to? Is that
gasoline tank?
A gas tank?
Yeah.
And then we get to exhibit 1.3, right?
Correct.
And that relates to a smaller vehicle.
Yes.
It's called an E1 HP100.
Correct.
Okay. And what type of truck is that?
It's a fire department ladder truck.
Okay. All right. So of these three, which one has the greatest turning radius?
It would actually be the second, EXB1.2.
Okay. So then if you could turn to that page. Okay. So then we first direct your attention to the intersection of Fishburne Road and relocated Sandhill Road. There is a turning movement depicted in that intersection, correct?
Correct.
And again, this is for the largest truck, or the tractor-trailer truck, right?
Correct.
And so what appears to happen is the truck has to swing out a little bit to make sure that it can navigate the corner of this property, of the development property, correct?
Correct.
And while it's not going over really the stop lines, if there were a vehicle that were coming in a eastbound direction on relocated Sandhill Road, that vehicle would have to wait for that truck to make its movement there before it could proceed, right?
In a certain condition, yes.
What do you mean by that?
Once the truck, these are the vehicle's wheel tracking. So once the truck were to proceed up into this area here, that inbound traffic would be able to enter into the area.
Okay. I was actually referring to the corner of the property, but we can talk about that area first. So in the area that you just depicted, which is the in-out off of Fishburne Road, there is an area where the tractor-trailer would block out inbound cars coming in just for a second or two.
Correct.
And it's not anticipated that the tractor-trailer is going to stop there, right? That's not a place of...
Correct, and nor is it anticipated these deliveries are made during the hours.
Okay. So then the tractor-trailer is going out, making a right turn on Fishburne Road. It gets to the intersection of Fishburne and relocated Sandhill Road, and it's depicted as making a right-hand turn on relocated Sandhill Road, correct?
This is the inbound. This template starts here, so the inbound movement make a right turn into relocated Sandhill Road, make a counterclockwise loop, and then exit out and proceed down Fishburne.
Okay, so my question at this point relates to the depiction of the turn at the intersection of Fishburne Road and relocated Sandhill Road. You would agree with me that there's some encroachment into the area where the left turn lane is for relocated Sandhill Road.
In this particular area right here?
Yes.
Yes, as shown, yes.
And then in the intersection itself, of course, there's some encroachment such that any vehicle that's trying to make a left off of relocated Sandhill onto Fishburne would have to wait for that tractor trailer to make its turn, correct?
Correct.
And then as you come down, you get to the point where where the tractor trailer would be coming to the stop line at the driveway, the Southern Drive, and relocated Sandhill Road. You see that?
Yes.
And this depicts a turning movement such that the tractor trailer would actually have to go across the stop line through the exit of the driveway.
Correct.
So in that instance, if there was a vehicle waiting there, that vehicle would have to back up. Is that correct?
Correct.
Did you, I you put the plan together, so I'm sure you considered, are there ways to alleviate this issue, right?
Correct. Once again, the idea behind this particular exercise is to determine the geometry of the rooms, okay? And there will be potential conflicts every once in a while between that movement of the tractor trailer and vehicles. But as I mentioned previously, the intent is to have these occur during low peak times and deliveries and such that would not be a constant issue or provide, you know, a negative impact to the overall. So.
1 second. Okay. Dan? Yes?
My name is Estraya. So I live right on the corner there.
You will have your chance to ask questions.
Okay.
Right now, Mr. McNair is asking these witness questions.
Okay.
You'll have a chance later. Thank you.
Did you get hurt?
So with respect to that particular location, did you consider trying to reduce the corner or somehow pull back the corner so that the tractor trailer could make an easier turn?
We could evaluate that, yes.
Okay. And is that true with respect to the corner at the intersection of Fishburne and relocated Sand Hill 2? Is there the possibility to pull that corner, or I guess you would call it soften the corner a little bit?
Yes, and I believe that's appropriate, you know, once again, as we look at the holistic approach with the highway occupancy improvements on a state road, that we would evaluate that. That is part of PennDOT's process as well, to be able to take a look at those largest vehicles that are anticipated to make the turn.
Okay. And then moving on, the tractor trailer would go northbound on the internal driveway. And it doesn't appear that there would be any navigational issues there, right? You have appropriate width, I'm sure, with respect to that driveway, correct?
Correct.
And then it comes up and it gets near the area proposed for the, is that the dumpster?
Yes.
That shaded box. Okay. And it's shown as having to make this turn across a portion of that shaded box area. Is that shaded area something that the tractor trailer can drive across?
Yes, this dumpster is intended to have an enclosure as well as a concrete pad in front. This portion is the concrete pad, as well as this area here, that hatch area, would be able to be driven on.
Okay. And then it would go in front of the... Those are the fuel pumps, or actually the fuel tanks, the underground fuel tanks. Is it? Yes. And so there's not, and you don't foresee any problems or encroachments in that particular area, right?
Correct.
Then there's also other deliveries besides the fuel that will occur. You would agree with that, right?
Yes.
There will be deliveries related to the restaurant, the retail shops, correct?
Correct.
And there will be some deliveries related to sheets, correct?
Correct.
And you've depicted on your plan two loading areas. Can you point those out?
Actually, more than two. There's various loading areas spread out, with one here along the residential area. There's a loading area proposed in here at the healthcare protection office. There's actually one down here, and then one here. The loading areas are sized based on the anticipated vehicles that are typically used at this building.
Okay.
We did not run turning templates on smaller box trucks, you know, city delivery vehicles, vans, anything of that nature. We made the assumption they would be able to traverse all these frames.
And if the larger vehicles can, you would certainly presume they could as well, right?
Correct, yes.
And it looks like from Exhibit 1.3 that the fire truck can navigate all of this without encroachments. Is that accurate?
That is correct. And it should be noted that this is not the exact fire truck that the Hershey Fire Department uses. They actually use one with an independent front suspension, which is actually more maneuverable in this particular one, as well as the fact that some of these channelized islands on the right in, right out can be driven over in terms of an emergency and things like that. So we just ran the fire truck through the same circuit, if you will, as the rest of the vehicles, but once again, it can provide access to the remainder of the facilities.
Okay. And with respect to the sheets loading area specifically, it looks like that's been proposed for being on the eastern side of the parking lot across from the sheets.
It'd be the southern side.
I'm sorry. Yes.
The plans.
So looking at what's on the screen, the top portion, there is, it says loading area at the top there. I don't have. So this loading area here, you see that?
I do.
Okay. Is that, that loading area is associated with the sheet store, correct?
It is, however, I must note that this particular template was prepared prior to the revisions that occurred to the latest October 12th plan.
Okay.
That has changed in that particular area.
And you're going to ruin my line of questioning. So where is the current loading proposed for sheets?
It is the area adjacent to the fuel.
Now, I guess what I'm asking is, there must be deliveries to the convenience store for the items that they sell, right?
Correct.
So if it's a box truck or whatever it is that comes, where would that, would they just park in a regular parking space?
I think I'm going to defer to the sheets representatives as to how their delivery plan functions.
All right. I guess I can ask this, though. There is no specific loading zone or loading area for the retail store, retail convenience store, I should say. Or adjacent to the convenience store.
I think, once again, the primary loading area is intended to be here.
But if a vehicle parked there and it's delivering, let's say, drinks and pretzels and whatever else for the convenience store, he would then have to take his items across the parking lot, right?
That is true. Once again, I believe the reality is he will find a place to park somewhere.
Right.
Likely where there are no occupied parking spaces. So he will find the closest spot to the building to unload. Right. Okay.
And you would anticipate that's the likely scenario with respect to the restaurant use as well for the building that contains the retail and restaurant and apartments. While there are loading areas depicted on either side, if there was a door that's in the middle of that building to access the restaurant, you would expect that a delivery truck is going to park as close to that as possible, right?
Yes.
Was it your job to evaluate site distance with respect to the driveways? I don't think I heard any testimony about that.
There was a separate consultant that was preparing the geometry improvements for the state road specifically. And that also, I believe, was identified in the traffic impact study.
Okay. So would it be more appropriate to ask you questions about appropriate site distance or the traffic impact consultant?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Creese.
Okay. And what about... I think you mentioned the word earlier, but clear sight triangles, that's something a civil engineer is...
Correct. I would take custody of that.
Okay. So when you're preparing this development plan, and you are considering and ensuring that there is a clear sight triangle for vehicles that are exiting this use, right?
Correct. The intent of the clear sight triangle is to be able to facilitate no blockage or obstruction of vision. So that really pertains to not putting any type of obstruction in those particular designated areas.
Which
and
would
trees.
Okay. So, right, no shrubs, no signs, anything of that nature that if someone looks, in a direction where they need to see traffic, their view is going to be unobstructed.
Correct.
So, just analyzing the plan... are there any areas where you have a concern related to the clear sight triangle?
No.
Okay. And if this came up during the land development process, that's something that could be modified. If you located something that would potentially cause an obstruction, you could modify it then, correct?
Yes, correct.
Because if you look at the area for relocated Sandhill Road down at the bottom, where the driveway comes in and out, it appears that there's a chance that proposed sign location might be within a site triangle.
So once again, I believe the sign location for the purposes of this exercise are really illustrative. They would be adjusted and or moved to be able to facilitate, you know, compliance with that clear site triangle.
Okay. And just for the record to point out, so there's actually, this is a proposed sign here, right?
Correct. There's clear site triangles here.
Oh, okay. So, but if the motorist is, in theory, stopped at that location, at the stop line, right, and they're looking in this direction, you know, there's the potential that the location of this particular sign could be problematic.
Correct, yes, and we would evaluate that. Once again, ordinance requires you to measure a certain distance from the street and things like that, but in practicality, additional items would be, you know, analyzed during some of the delay development process.
Okay. And just a couple more questions. I believe you may have heard some questions that I asked of the developer related to internal pedestrian movement. You have proposed it's like a sidewalk bike path, correct, throughout the development?
Correct. So there's I'll say two types. There's internal circulation, there's internal circulation with, you know, sidewalks provided around the particular uses, as well as a multi pedestrian slash bicycle path that reaches the perimeter of the property.
Okay. And one of the questions I had asked earlier related to someone who resides at the apartment building, if they wanted to drop off their child at the daycare facility and didn't want to have to drive over there, is there a way, a method for them to walk there without having to traverse the parking lot?
Yes. Once again, I think they utilize a combination of these interior sidewalks to get over there and potentially be able to drop their child off.
Okay. All right. Those are all the questions I have at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Chris? Oh, yeah, actually, yes. Let's first take a break back here, quarter of it.